Chapter 5 of My Airships by Alberto Santos Dumont. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. Chapter 5. The Real and Imaginary Dangers of Ballooning. One of the most astonishing adventures I had during this period of spherical ballooning took place directly over Paris. I had started from Vaugirard with 4 invited guests in a large balloon constructed for me after I had tired of making solitary trips in the little Brazil. From the start there seemed to be very little wind. I rose slowly, seeking an air current. At 1,000 meters, 3/5 of a mile high, I found nothing. At 1,500 meters, 1 mile, we still remained almost stationary. Throwing out more ballast, we rose to 2,000 meters, 1.25 mile, when a vagrant breeze started to take us over the center of Paris. When we had arrived at a point over the Louvre, it left us. We descended and found nothing. Then happened the ludicrous thing. In a blue sky, without a cloud, bathed in sunlight, and with the faint yelps of all the dogs of Paris mounting to our ears, we lay becalmed. We went up again, hunting an air current. Down we went again, hunting an air current. Up and down, up and down. Hour after hour passed, and we remained always hanging, always over Paris. At first we laughed. Then we grew tired. Then almost alarmed. At one time I had even the idea of landing in Paris itself, near the Gare de Lyon, where I perceived an open space. Yet the attempt would have been dangerous, because my 4 companions could not be depended on for coolness in an emergency. They had not the ballooning habit. Worst of all, we were now losing gas. Drifting slowly eastward, hour after hour, one by one, the sacks of ballast had been emptied. By the time that we had reached the Vincennes Wood, we had begun to throw out miscellaneous objects. Ballast sacks, the luncheon baskets, 2 light camp stools, 2 Kodaks, and a case of photographic plates. All during this latter period we were quite low, not over 300 yards above the treetops. Now, as we sank lower, we had a real fright. Would not the guide rope at least curl itself around some tree and hold us there for hours? So we struggled to maintain our altitude above the treetops, until, all at once, a queer little wind gust took us over the Vincennes racecourse. "Now is our time," I exclaimed to my companions. "Hold fast." With this, I pulled on the valve rope, and we came down with celerity, but scarcely any shock. Personally, I have felt not only fear, but also pain and real despair in a spherical balloon. It has not been often, because no sport is more regularly safe and mild and pleasurable. Such real dangers as it has are confined usually to the landing, and the balloonist of experience knows how to meet them. While from its imaginary dangers in the air, one is regularly very safe. Therefore, the particular adventure, full of pain and fear, that I recall to mind, was all the more remarkable and that it occurred in high altitude. It happened at Nice in 1900, when I went up from the Place Massena in a good-sized spherical balloon, alone, and intending to drift a few hours only amid the enchanting scenery of the mountains and the sea. The weather was fine, but the barometer soon fell, indicating storm. For a time, the wind took me in the direction of Chimay, but as I rose, it threatened to carry me out to sea. I threw out ballast, abandoned the current, and mounted to the height of about a mile. Shortly after this, I let the balloon go down again, hoping to find a safer air current. But within 300 yards of the ground, near the Var, I noticed that I had ceased descending. As I had determined to land soon in any case, I pulled on the valve rope and let out more gas. And here the terrible experience began. I could not go down. I glanced at the barometer and found, indeed, that I was going up. Yet I ought to be descending, and I felt, by the wind and everything, that I must be descending. Had I not let out gas? To my great uneasiness, I discovered only too soon what was wrong. In spite of my continuous apparent descent, I was nevertheless being lifted by an enormous column of air rushing upward. While I fell in it, I rose rapidly higher with it. I opened the valve again. It was useless. The barometer showed that I had reached a still greater altitude, and I could now take account of the fact by the way in which the land was disappearing under me. I now closed the valve to save my gas. There was nothing but to wait and see what would happen. The upward rushing column of air continued to take me to a height of 3,000 meters, almost 2 miles. I could do nothing but watch the barometer. Then, after what seemed a long time, it showed that I had begun descending. When I began to see land, I threw out ballast, not to strike the earth too quickly. Now I could perceive the storm beating the trees and shrubbery. Up in the storm itself, I had felt nothing. Now, too, as I continued falling lower, I could see how swiftly I was being carried laterally. By the time I perceived the coming danger, I was in it. Carried along at a terrific rate, knocking against the tops of trees, and continually threatened with painful death, I threw out my anchor. It caught in trees and shrubs and broke away. Had it been heavy timber, all would have been over with me. As it chanced, I was dragged through the small trees and yielding shrubbery, my face a mass of cuts and bruises, my clothes torn from my back, in pain and strain, fearing the worst, and able to do nothing to save myself. Just as I had given myself up for lost, the guide rope wound itself around a tree and held. I was precipitated from the basket and fell unconscious. When I came to, I had to walk some distance until I met some peasants. They helped me back to Nice, where I went to bed and had the doctors sew me up. During the early period, when I was glad to make public ascents for my balloon constructor, I had undergone a somewhat similar experience, and that by night. The ascent took place at Peronne, in the north of France, one stormy afternoon, quite late. Indeed, I started in spite of thunder threatening in the distance, a gloomy semi-twilight all around me, and the remonstrances of the public among whom it was known that I was not an aeronaut by trade. They feared my inexperience and wished me either to renounce the ascent or else to oblige me to take up the balloon constructor with me, he being the responsible organizer of the fete. I would listen to nothing and started off as I had planned. Soon I had cause to regret my rashness. I was alone, lost in the clouds, amid flashes of lightning and claps of thunder, in the rapidly approaching darkness of the night. On I went, tearing in the blackness. I knew that I must be going with great speed, yet felt no motion. I heard and felt the storm. I formed a part of the storm. I felt myself in great danger, yet the danger was not tangible. With it, there was a fierce kind of joy. Now, what shall I say? How shall I describe it? Up there in the black solitude, amid the lightning flashes and the thunderclaps, I was a part of the storm. When I landed the next morning, long after I had sought a higher altitude and let the storm pass on beneath me, I found that I was well into Belgium. The dawn was peaceful, so that my landing took place without difficulty. I mention this adventure because it was made account of in the papers of the time, and to show that night ballooning, even in a storm, may be more dangerous in appearance than reality. Indeed, night ballooning has a charm that is all its own. One is alone in the black void, true, in a murky limbo where one seems to float without weight, without a surrounding world, a soul freed from the weight of matter. Yet, now and again, there are the lights of earth to cheer one. We see a point of light far on ahead. Slowly it expands. Then, where there was one blaze, there are countless bright spots. They run in lines, with here and there a brighter cluster. We know that it is a city. Then again, it is out into the lone land, with only a faint glow here and there. When the moon rises, we see, perhaps, a faint curling line of gray. It is a river, with the moonlight falling on its waters. There is a flash upward, and a faint roar. It is a railway train. The locomotive's fires, maybe, illuminating for a moment its smoke as it rises. Then, for safety, we throw out more ballast and rise through the black solitudes of the clouds into a soul-lifting burst of splendid starlight. There, alone with the constellations, we await the dawn. And when the dawn comes, red and gold and purple in its glory, one is almost loth to seek the earth again, although the novelty of landing in who knows what part of Europe affords still another unique pleasure. For many, the great charm of all ballooning lies here. The balloonist becomes an explorer. Say that you are a young man who would roam, who would enjoy adventures, who would penetrate the unknown and deal with the unexpected. But say that you are tied down at home by family and business. I advise you to take to spherical ballooning. At noon, you lunch peaceably amid your family. At 2 p.m., you mount. 10 minutes later, you are no longer a commonplace citizen. You are an explorer, an adventurer of the unknown as truly as they who freeze on Greenland's icy mountains or melt on India's coral strand. You know but vaguely where you are and cannot know where you are going. Yet much may depend upon your choice as well as your skill and experience. The choice of altitude is yours, whether to accept this current or mount higher and go with another. You may mount above the clouds, where one breathes oxygen from tubes, while the earth, in the last glimpse you had of it, seems to spin beneath you and you lose all bearings. Or you may descend and scud along the surface, aided by your guide rope and a dipper full of ballast, to leap over trees and houses. Giant leaps, made without effort. Then, when the time comes to land, there is the true explorer's zest of coming on unknown peoples like a god from a machine. What country is this? Will the answer come in German, Russian, or Norwegian? Paris Aero Club members have been shot at when crossing European frontiers. Others, landing, have been taken prisoners to the Burgomeister or the military governor to languish as spies while the telegraph clicked to the far-off capital, and then to end the evening over champagne at an officer's enthusiastic mess. Still others have had to strive with the dangerous ignorance and superstition even of some remote little peasant population. These are the chances of the winds. End of chapter 5.